Simon Marks and Rebecca Foster on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone with feature story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.
WMPG is on the air thanks to listener donation, generous support from the University of Southern Maine. USM educates Maine's future artists, business people, engineers, healthcare professionals, lawyers, managers, public servants, scientists, and teachers. More information is available at usm.maine.edu.
The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed on Blunt Youth Radio are those of the speakers and guests, not necessarily those of WMPG or the University of Southern Maine or its offices and trustees.
Make no mistake,
you are listening to
Blunt.
Newsreaders, politicians, teachers, lecturers.
In schools, there are plenty of rules and regulations. Some help students, teachers, and the educational environment. Others, not so much.
Tonight we'll be discussing the latter of these two situations, when policy hinders education instead of helping students learn.
In other words, we'll be discussing the failure of school policy, and we'll be doing so through a number of different lenses.
First, we'll be joined by fellow Blunt member Gabby Farrell as we hear her discuss her feature about bullying and bullying policy.
Next, we'll hear from Christian Yambe, a Blunt member as well, and we'll listen to his piece regarding reasonable suspicion policies in schools.
Finally, we'll talk to school board member-elect Pius Ali about a wide range of policies in the Portland Public Schools, his views on them, and what he wishes to change and accomplish in his upcoming term. I'm Leo Hilton.
I'm Tyler Simpson, and you're listening to Blunt Youth Radio.
Before we begin, I'd like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, and our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909.
Also, feel free to tweet any questions at us. Our handle is at Blunt Youth Radio. And check out our website, bluntradio.org, for free streaming of this show as well as previous ones.
So, first off, Gabby, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Current Blunt member and South Portland junior, Gabby Farrell, will discuss with us her feature and her experiences with school bullying policies in her piece entitled Snitches Get Stitches. So let's listen to that feature.
Last year, when I was a sophomore in high school, I made the mistake of posting a vague subtweet. There had been a string of incidents at multiple high schools in the area where students had posted pictures of their alcohol and drug paraphernalia, and school administrators were busting them for it. Then the students were very angry and claimed this was an invasion of their privacy. Mind you, these were public Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook accounts. In light of these events, I posted a tweet that read, "Maybe we shouldn't post publicly about illegal activities if we don't want to get in trouble." Unbeknownst to me, at that time, a group of girls from my school had gotten called to the assistant principal's office because of incriminating photos on their Instagrams. They somehow found out about my tweet, and that's when all hell broke loose. They assumed that I had, in their words, snitched. For the record, I didn't, but if I had, their reaction was still not appropriate. One of the girls replied directly to my tweet, saying, "Are you the police or a snitch? Either way, you need to mind your own business before it becomes a problem." Another asked if I had orgies with the assistant principals and told them everything I saw on social media. I ended up deleting my Twitter within the hour because almost everyone in my school had tweeted some form of the phrase, "Snitches get stitches," or something else threatening. The next day, I went to school, but I ended up in the social worker's office because I was genuinely afraid for my well-being. These girls were really scary, and they had a lot of friends to back them up. The social worker called down the assistant principal. The assistant principal said that the tweets were threatening, and the people who sent them could be suspended. However, in order for any action to be taken, my name had to be attached to the complaint. I didn't want that, because then I was snitching on them for being mean after they falsely accused me of snitching on them. That was the end of the line. I was told nothing could be done if I didn't come forward. I have reviewed the policies. It's true. The policy says no action shall be taken based on an anonymous complaint. This is stated differently in two places, however. in one part of the Administration Procedure Guidelines policy. It states, reports of bullying may be made anonymously, but no disciplinary action shall be taken against a student solely on the basis of an anonymous report. Just a few lines below that, it states again, bullying reports may be made anonymously, but in no instance will any action be taken against any person or organization on the basis of an anonymous report. So which is it? No action at all or no disciplinary actions? Another discrepancy in what I was told and what the policy states is that under who can report bullying, it states that really anyone can. Students who have experienced bullying, students who have witnessed it, and any school employee who witnessed it. That was not told to me at the time. When I said I didn't want to attach my name to the report, I was told that nothing else could be done. It certainly makes sense that disciplinary action can't be taken based on an anonymous complaint. That's how the real justice system in America works. But this incident happened online. The threatening tweets will live on the internet forever. Why couldn't one of my friends report it, or even the assistant principal herself? I showed her a picture of the tweet. Is this a failure specifically of the policy, or of an administrator not understanding and implementing the policy correctly? This is Gabby Farrell reporting for Blunt Youth Radio.
Welcome back. First of all, Gabby, I just wanted to say, what a fantastic piece and bizarre
and
interesting story.
I would definitely call that a failure of educational policy. What do you think administrators and policymakers could do better to help students faced with this kind of direct harassment?
Be clearer in what actions can be taken once this happens and who actually needs to be following up and doing that. I felt kind of like if I really wanted something to be something to happen, it would be my responsibility to, like, it didn't occur to me at the time to go look through the policies, but now that I have, I wish I had back then, because I could have brought that to their attention and asked, how is this what you told me was going to how this could be implemented much better?
Because there's that big discrepancy in the language of...
Exactly. I think there's a very big difference between no disciplinary action and no action at all.
And it says both.
Yeah. Right, so. Next to each other. So I don't know what school board approved that, but someone didn't read it carefully enough because, you know, I read it the first time and said, well, what is this? Why? Who didn't read these two sentences that say the same thing but not actually the same thing?
Right. So what, I mean, this happened a year ago to you, right?
Yes.
So what inspired you to finally make a piece about it now?
I'm pretty sure it was just this, we were talking about this show in one of our planning meetings, and I said, oh, well, something happened to me that, and no repercussions happened. And then I thought, I wonder if there's, the policies are online, and they are. All of the policies are online.
And if you wanted to check out the policies for the South Portland School Department, where would you look?
SPSD.org, and then go to board, and under Board of Education, it has policy book. You can look at policies on everything from...
The whole handbook.
Yeah, the whole handbook, from bullying to what we do with do not resuscitate orders.
And you can do the same thing for the Portland Public Schools on their website, portlandschools.org.
Yes, you can.
So one thing that I found really interesting with your piece is the way that you brought it to the assistant principal, or to the
social worker.
To the social worker, because you felt unsafe. And I'm wondering if this happened to you only a year ago, how many other people can similar things have happened to in the time since?
Stuff happens on Twitter all the time. I mean, there was a fight just the other day where people were exchanging very derogatory terms back and forth. And I do know that those students did actually get suspended. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting, because the students who initiated the fight were both suspended, and then the one who was attacked but then, you know, responded back using the same language, which was he, I think, received a detention, and the other two got suspended. And I wonder what the difference between that handling of that and the handling of my incident was, because it was also on Twitter. It was also... It wasn't even a threat. It was just calling them names. So,
I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these Twitter assaults, I don't know how else to describe it, are just go under the radar, because the policy clearly is not meant for people to be able to come forward.
Exactly. It says that anonymous reports can be made, but that no action supposedly will be taken, which is interesting because how can the report really be anonymous if you're looking at a picture of what happened? I mean, it's the same as if someone had punched someone in the face and, you know, you took a video of it. It's photographic proof that this had taken place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not anonymous if you can look at it and see who did it and see who it was at.
The whole situation of bullying and harassment is totally changing with social media, and it's all rapidly changing, but the policy is sort of staying the same.
Right. They have a little clause that says cyberbullying is when you use the internet, but it doesn't have a different...
And Portland Public Schools has the exact same clause in there, or a very, very similar clause in their bullying language. But I wonder if one of the biggest issues with this is that now, I mean, at least in Portland Public Schools, they have the iPads in the classroom. And I feel like that's just a whole nother way to passively, aggressively get at people. And I know I had at least one instance this year so far where I had a picture tweeted of me during a class with some language saying something like, "Will you please shut up already?" or something like that with a group of my friends. And while I understand that we were being obnoxious, Twitter just allows for people to express it in a much more violent way than they would have to do if they were going to come up to you and ask you to do it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the internet creates it. Just people will do anything on the internet that they wouldn't do in real life. And I think bringing that up, the Twitter situation, I noticed a difference. I've been looking at the South Portland and the Portland policies. And in South Portland, it says that bullying for there to be discipline happening, the bullying has to take place on school property. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, you know, if kids are at home tweeting at each other while they're at home, that's not technically on the school grounds. But in Portland, it says that if it didn't take place on school property, but it's making students feel unsafe in the school environment, then it's still a school dealt with bullying issue. But that language is not found in the South Portland policies. Yeah.
So you would definitely say the South Portland policies need to be updated for this.
Yeah, definitely.
And so you're now a member of the, or a student representative on the South Portland School Board, correct?
Yes, I am.
So are, in your position, are you allowed to propose something like a change like that?
I know there's a committee who does policies, and I don't know if the student representatives are allowed to be on committees or not. I would have to ask someone about that. I know that the policies, once the policy committee writes them, they come to the school board for a vote and a review and a vote. The student representatives don't get a vote, but they can ask questions and discuss the topic. And I don't know how you go about proposing a change in something. Uh-huh. I know there's time for public comment. I don't know who you contact to try to get, you know, your item on the agenda. I think you would.
Right.
It was not made clear.
So it's kind of hard as a student, even as a student representative, to change things.
Yeah. I haven't specifically looked into it, but I mean, yeah.
You think an increase in student representation would help?
I think definitely. I think often students' voices are silenced in the school system, which is ridiculous because the school board is there because schools are there for kids.
Yeah.
They're there for students. Teachers are employed for students. You know, we pay taxes to have schools so that students can learn.
Yeah.
And there's just such a limited, I mean, okay, you know, they do try to bring in the student voice. We have a student senate. We have two student representatives on the school board. They're not allowed to vote. I think that, you know, they're not really taking as – I mean, we have a student senate, but it's like there are a lot of barriers to actually making changes. Like sometimes we talk about trying to implement a shorter school day and we don't know where to go from there. Like,
right.
Do we show up at a school board meeting randomly? Like, are they going to take us seriously? It's – student voice is not
– right.
Even if they let you talk, they might not listen or – try to affect change based on
that. There's definitely a big disconnect there between the people who are making the policy and
So if you want to talk and have someone listen, feel free to call our number. It's 780-4909. That's 780-4909 with any questions or comments about the failure of school policy in Maine and around the globe. We're joined in our studio right now with Blunt member Gabby Farrell, and we're discussing bullying and bullying policy as well as a large variety of other topics regarding South Portland schools. One thing that struck me about what you were just saying is the way that students aren't taken seriously, and I wonder if there's a shift that we can make, or a shift that somebody can make at least, away from the idea that as students our opinions have to be valued less because we're just children. I mean, and if it's our education, we have, you know, we value our education. Why shouldn't we be allowed to have a say in what we're doing?
Yeah, I mean, that's just ageism in the country, in the system. Students, kids, teenagers, they're, you know, smoking pot and wearing belly shirts. What do they have to say?
They're not going to take things seriously.
I don't know. I went to a civil rights team training recently, and it was very... Granted, it was high school and middle school, but it was very like, advisors, you need to be hawks. Make sure no one is doing anything wrong. Students are not to be in the breakfast line. Like, very much adults control your students.
Kind of like a guilty until proven innocent kind
exactly.
of attitude.
And I think that, you know, if you treat them more like adults, that's getting them ready for the real world. I mean, you have sheltered them and you don't let them make their own decisions or do their own things. And then you're like, oh, now you got to get a job for yourself. You have to do this and that. But, you know, we haven't been able to have a say.
Yeah. I wonder if that's why Blunt is such a great resource for students, because they can come and they can talk for an hour and a half or an hour on the radio about things that matter and people will listen to them.
It is. That's what I said when we were making our video for our soon-to-be-launched Indiegogo campaign. I said exactly that. Students need a voice. This is it. People
yeah.
ignore us.
you mentioned briefly also a policy that I think is pretty interesting, the do not resuscitate
yes.
thing in South Portland. They have a policy that says that if a student has a do not resuscitate order, it will not be respected.
Yeah. So as I was getting into reading the policies about bullying, I then started reading all of the other policies, because it turns out there's policies for everything, and it's very interesting, and it's hard to stop. So I found one that caught my eye. It says, policy regarding do not resuscitate requests. A primary concern of all district employees shall be student health and safety. Implementation of a do not resuscitate request is not consistent with this policy. Accordingly, a DNR request shall not be honored, and no student is to be denied the fullest, genuine, appropriate efforts to preserve life and health. And I saw this and I thought, that's got to be like a legal document, though. Can they really just decide that? And so I did some Googling, and there's really, you know, a lot of unsure and... ambiguity in the laws, the federal state laws regarding do not resuscitate orders, especially in the school system. And a lot of it is there's not any legal protections for teachers that may think that they are not supposed to be honoring the do not resuscitate order when in fact, you know, the cardiac arrest wasn't caused by the terminal disease. And so then they can be sued, and there's not a lot of legal protections there, which is a big problem and part of the reason that schools shy away from do not resuscitate orders, I guess.
Well, that makes sense. It was just surprising to me that was right in the legal language.
I thought it was...
Or that they'd had enough time to think about that they're like, oh, yeah, and we should probably include that in our policies
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, and tough luck if you have one. Too bad. We will not be honoring that. And I know there are schools who have... they do allow it, and so it's really not school districts just get to decide for themselves, which I think is kind of weird. What it's supposed to be is, you know, you're supposed to talk to the school resource officer, the school nurse, get the pediatrician involved, the parents, like make sure that everything is really solidified in place. Because another problem is it kind of talked a lot about elementary schools and how I guess, I mean, it would be traumatic for anyone to see. What it is someone goes into cardiac arrest and you don't provide CPR. And so that's for students that are watching this. They're like, oh my God, why aren't you helping them? I just saw that person die. You could have helped them. And so that can be very traumatic. And so it's dealing with that trauma that becomes problematic.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Keeping on the subject of policies, a different policy that there's been a little bit of controversy about is the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes.
In Portland, it's not too strict, but in South Portland, the wording is quite interesting.
Yeah. I personally don't stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance. I think it's creepy. it freaks me out. I was looking to see if there was an actual policy about it, and what it says is it's under opening exercises. It says provisions shall be made for appropriate opening exercises at the beginning of each school day. The exercises shall include the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States flag, as well as the teachings of the significance of the flag, and to teach students to love, honor, and respect the American flag.
Wow.
Which I think is...
strong language?
Very strong language. We're teaching students to love it, which scares me a little bit.
Yeah.
This is a flag we're talking about.
Yeah, a flag. And...
not the country itself.
Yeah, which I just think... I don't know, man.
It's kind of bizarre in a way that... that language would even be there, that it's, you know, I mean, I feel like, you know, there's no pressure in my, I mean, I've had one run-in the entire time I've been in high school with a teacher who got a little bit angry at me because I didn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah,
but the fact that they even play it every single day, isn't that just enough?
Exactly.
Yeah. If you want to call in, our number is 780-4909. If you have a question or a comment, or if you want to share with us your story about a failure of educational or school policy that you've experienced in your own life, again, that number is 780-4909, or you can tweet at us at Blunt Youth Radio.
Yep, we will be checking the Twitter feed during the next half, so feel free to tweet.
I don't know if we're still talking about the flag. I'm going to be a senior next year, and at South Portland, the senior class president is the one who says the Pledge of Allegiance every morning. And I'm a class officer, and my fellow class officers and I have decided that we're going to try to take a stand next year and do some different Pledge of Allegiance, like I pledge allegiance to the earth or to the universe, because I know those are out there and already written. But this policy kind of scares me now that maybe we actually won't be able to do it. But this policy was interesting to me because after reading all of them, you get kind of used to the wording, and most of them, you know, mention at South Portland High School, we will do this as the South Portland School Board, we have decided this. And this, the flag policy seemed like much more generic wording, like the Board of Education of a school administrative unit may require at the commencement of each class to say the Pledge of Allegiance, which is... I feel like they copy and pasted it from somewhere. So I don't, it's interesting. It does say that the legal reference is Title 20-A MSRA little thingy 4805. I don't know how to reference that. It's not a link or anything.
We have a caller on the line, Matt from Biddeford. Are you with us?
I am.
Hello, Matt.
Yes, hello.
Hi, do you have a question or comment for us?
Well, I just wanted to comment that I'm really glad to hear you challenging or concerned about this requirement to or encouragement to, you know, say the Pledge of Allegiance. I think it's really important to challenge these things. You know, to me, the United States is not a country based on, you know, racial or religious identity. It's really a country based on ideas. And to me, one of those important ideas is freedom of speech. And to me, you know, this exhortation or requirement to recite, you know, to this communal incantation, if you will, is antithetical to the principles of the country, as far as I'm concerned. And, and I'm really glad to hear that, you know, youth are concerned about this too. And I encourage you to, it's very dangerous in terms of bringing down, you know, personal attacks on yourselves. But I, you know, with that caution, I would encourage you to, you know, to resist that policy and try and change it.
Well, thank you, Matt.
And, you know, also the, I didn't catch people's names, but the student representative on the school board, I think, you know, doing the homework that you've done is good in preparation for, you know, proposing a policy like on bullying or something like that. Before you propose it, you might want to, you know, talk to people. I don't know anything about South Portland and the people involved, but talk to people who might know the history of it, and or, you know, if you could see when it was last changed, if there was a recent debate on it and that was decided on, it might be difficult to change. But, you know, usually under, you know, on an agenda, you know, something conducted by the Robert's Rules of Order, there's going to be new business on the agenda, and that would be the time to bring it up if you've got your in a row.
Yeah.
So just a comment on that. And I really appreciate you guys doing this show and the effort that goes into it. So thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
And if any of you other listeners want to be like Matt and call in, our number is 780-4909.
That's, yeah, we love that.
780-4909. I'm Leo Hilton.
And I'm Tyler Simpson.
And we're sitting here talking to Gabby Farrell, another Blunt member and student at South Portland High School. We only have about 3 minutes left until our break, so go ahead and call in. If not, call in after our break. Gabby, do you have any other final things to say about your experience with the bullying and bullying policy at South Portland High?
You know, I think overall it's actually more clear than Portland's.
Yes.
I've found the South Portland policies have, you know, they define it, and then they have like forms for how to, you know, report about it, and then administrative procedure, what the administrator should do about it. And at Portland, it just sort of says administrators are in charge. Yeah. Oh, do you want to read it?
Oh, no, I've got way too much here, but go right ahead.
It's just I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, administrators will be in charge of dealing with disciplinary actions in regards to bullying. This is what bullying is. It's when you make students feel unsafe or you attack them or and if you use a cell phone to do it, it's cyberbullying. But it doesn't say, you know, write the student's name here, write the bullied person's name here, yeah. Who was the teacher that saw it, who was the friend that saw it.
Right.
Which maybe it's somewhere else on the website, but it's definitely not
easily accessible.
Easily accessible, yes.
Portland's barely even defines it,
yeah.
If I'm correct.
Yeah, I mean, no, it defines bullying in a very overt way, but it's the Portland High School policy itself doesn't list anything about what the responsibility or procedure of the administration is.
It just says that the administration's in charge of that, which could mean
a lot of things.
Interesting. Like, to what extent should it be at the administrator's discretion to just decide that? And maybe it should. And maybe it should be the school board, you know, defining every little, you know, minutia detail. Or maybe it should be the administrators taking it into their own hands.
I mean, that seems not to work too well, because in your case it was the administrator's responsibility. And
I mean, in my opinion at least, there needs to be some sort of fail-safe mechanism that if the administration fails to respond, that the students can respond in their own way.
Yeah,
or that the administration can. Gabby, thank you for your piece and thank you for talking with us.
You're welcome.
And we're going to have to go to break.
Stay with us.
All right, let's do some weather now. Let's see. Tonight, it's going to be mostly clear with a low around 38. And then Tuesday, that is tomorrow, it's going to be mostly sunny with a high near 41, so cooling down a little bit from how it was earlier in the day. Tuesday night, it's going to be clear again, low around 27. Wednesday, it's going to be but about a degree warmer at 42, and not particularly windy either. Wednesday night, mostly clear with a low around 24. Thursday, sunny, high near 44. Thursday night, it's going to be almost freezing. Friday, it's going to get even a little warmer, the high near 46. And then this is where it gets really interesting. Friday night, a chance of rain and snow showers. So keep your left eye out for that. You're listening to
WMPG and W281AC, Southern Maine Community Radio from the University of Southern Maine.
And this is also Blunt Youth Radio. And now here's a little jam from The Weeknd.
Welcome back. You're listening to Blunt Youth Radio. I'm Leo Hilton.
And I'm Tyler Simpson.
And tonight we're discussing the failure of school policy. During the first half of our show, we talked to Gabby Farrell, a South Portland High School student and student representative on the South Portland School Department school board. And now we are joined by Gabby Farrell and Christian Yambe, who is a Blunt member and a Portland High School student. Christian, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Christian, you created a feature for us today. And so, first off, we're going to listen to that feature.
My name is Christian Yambe, and I'm a student at Casco Bay High School. A few weeks ago, I experienced something I considered a failure of school policy, of search and seizure of student property. In my case, the problem was the unwarranted search. So I was in my third period, and I got called into the principal's office and sat down. The principal asked me if I was all right, and I told him I was fine. And I asked him why I was in the office, and he asked me if I had taken any pills or any substances that day, and I said no. And he asked me to empty out my pockets in my hoodie and in my pants, and I did so. And he asked me if he should check my bag, and I told him I had nothing with me. And he told me that one of the teachers had reported me because they thought I was acting a bit strange. Even though it was all done, I still felt really, I felt really angry and uncomfortable. So a couple people agreed with me that this was a violation, and they told me I should go back and talk to the principal, and I did, and he said that they actually had the right to do that due to reasonable suspicion, but I still felt that this was unfair and unprofessional, that they would search me unwarranted. And although the principal had apologized, I felt that the issue had not been resolved. And even though he apologized, I felt as if it was not sincere. And coming out of this, I felt like the situation had represented a failure of school policy, and it didn't necessarily make me want to learn. And I felt it damaged my opinion of the school. And I felt less like a student or equal to the teachers and the principal. And I felt more like a criminal. After all that, I began to wonder, maybe it was a necessary part of being a teacher or a principal. However, I don't think it was done respectfully and ultimately made me feel less comfortable at the school, especially since I hadn't done anything in the first place. For Blunt Youth Radio, this is Christian Yambe.
Well, Christian, thank you for that fantastic piece, and I thought it really brings to light some important parts of educational policy, and the fact that, I mean, if that happened to me, I would feel really uncomfortable being in a place where, you know, I'm supposed to feel comfortable so I can learn and understand, and that obviously puts you in a situation where you can't feel comfortable, like you feel like you're under suspicion all the time.
Yeah. At first when it happened, I was just confused. I didn't know what was going on, and then the more people I talked about it, the teachers, my friends, they were like, that's an outrage. They can't just do that. And the more I talked to people, the more angry I felt about it. Because school is a place where everyone should feel comfortable. And I felt like they were taking that right away from me by doing that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be desired in the criminal rules as far as reasonable suspicion searches go in school. Because I remember I took a criminal justice class, and when we went over the fact that in schools, teachers don't need probable cause, they only need reasonable suspicion, teachers and staff, to search a student. And I just thought, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
And I wonder if that acts almost as a microcosm to a lot of the policies in police departments. I mean, especially the most controversial one being the stop and frisk policy in New York, where they can stop people just for reasonable suspicion of doing something wrong.
I brought up the Portland Public Schools policy on searches and questioning of students. I have the second bullet point under searches of students' personal property in students' immediate possession. It says that searches must be conducted by a school administrator in the presence of a witness. Did he bring a witness into the room?
Yeah, he brought the he's sort of like the athletic director and also like the dude who keeps everybody in line, sort of.
And it says that within their student searches may be authorized when, in their judgment, there are reasonable grounds to suspect that a student has violated or is violating school committee policies, school rules, federal or state laws. So, that is the policy.
And I think that comes back to the ageism thing a little bit, where they don't trust kids like they trust everybody else, in a way. You know, it's, you know, if we were fully grown adults, I mean, of course, it still happens frequently, but I think less frequently, and it would be much, much more controversial if they were to put adults in a building for, you know, 5 days a week, 9 months out of the year, and put them under strict supervision. And I understand that maybe teenagers are, you know, we're developing, we're a little bit more keen to do risky activities like abuse substances or whatever. But, you know, shouldn't they be preparing us for an environment where it's going to be the case where they can't just stop us under reasonable suspicion?
I mean, when you're an adult, it's an option to go and partake in, like, substances and just, you know, waste your time and all that. I mean, they can stop you if you're young and do it, but you should be getting ready for when the adult life in which that is present everywhere.
That's true. What's your long-term reaction, and now how do you feel about the whole event?
I mean, usually I would just go about just doing whatever, but now I'm conscious all the time. What if they call me back in another time, think I'm doing something wrong again? I'm not really sure what I had been doing, but I guess one of the teachers thought that I was acting a bit loopy. I mean, I don't understand that.
I mean, not in any offense to you, but you were a rather strange individual to begin with.
I don't think I was acting any different than I do any other day.
Yeah.
And I think this just came to me. This might be, when they define bullying, they say it's making students feel unsafe or targeted in the school building. And I would say that just being dragged into the principal's office and forced to empty your pockets and your backpack and, you know, having them search through your things because they think that you're doing something illegal just based on one observation by one teacher, I mean, that would make me feel really uncomfortable and really unsafe.
And very targeted.
I hate the assistant principal's office. It makes me sweat and stress out and, like, my heart is beating, and that's not something that I want to be dealing with.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's the same way I would feel if someone, you know, called me a name in the hallway.
Yeah, definitely. Some very interesting parallels to be drawn there.
I just want to remind everyone this is a call-in show. Anybody with their own opinion, something to say about failure of educational policy, feel free to call us at 780-4909. That's 780-4909. Back to your situation, Christian.
I mean, from a different viewpoint, I could see where maybe, just a little bit, where that seems like it would be necessary. Because prior to my case, I've seen where they've used that and actually have caught people who were maybe selling or getting ready to sell, or maybe getting ready to smoke behind the school or something like that, and they've actually caught those people and had repercussions to that. But then, I don't know, after it happened to me, I felt really uncomfortable about it. And
my question for you, Christian, is now that that's happened to you, do you feel more deterred from doing those illegal activities?
I mean, I still have the same viewpoint. I don't think that's changed anything. I'm not into any illegal substances, but I don't know. I mean,
obviously that's true, but if you would have an inclination of doing that, would that be the first thought that would come to mind? You know, would be someone stopping you at school?
I don't think so. I would just not.
So not only has it failed in the fact that you feel intimidated and uncomfortable in school, It's also failed because it doesn't accomplish the goal, which would be to deter students from performing that activity.
Exactly.
Do you feel that this happening to students is just, I mean, it's very much stop and frisk, like, in the sense that anybody can be stopped for a reasonable suspicion, not probable cause. But do you think that it would be any more appropriate if adults were to be included in this? I mean, it's not realistic to think that, but if... Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know. I'm conflicted about this whole thing because, I feel really conflicted about the subject.
What I hear you getting at is what I was saying earlier about ageism, and I think that comes back to, like, the rights of students and how it's been, you know, the Supreme Court has said that the, you know, free speech rights of students are actually less than that of, you know, an adult in the real world. And I think something that I keep thinking about, I don't know if this is even related, is that it's, you know, you have to go to school. And I mean, you could be lucky enough to get into, you know, a really nice private school if you have the money, or to be unschooled or homeschooled if your parents can stay home, you know. But for most kids, you have to go to school every day. It's the law. And so is it really fair to make you go into this building and make you do all these things, and then you have to follow their rules? Otherwise, you're in trouble with the place that they've made you come to. And is it fair to make people go to a place and then make them follow your rules of the place you've made them attend?
A place you have to attend, it's mandatory.
There are policies in the handbook of what to do if you don't attend school.
Exactly.
Truancy,
they'll come and get
policies.
You. Yeah. They'll pick you up in a car.
I just want to point out, Amy Bradstreet on Twitter tweeted at us, I absolutely think schools should hold the students' rights with the highest regard, and that's clearly not happening. So thank you, Amy Bradstreet, and if you want to be like Amy, you can tweet at us, at Blunt Youth Radio, with your questions or comments, and we will answer you live on air. You can also call us at 780-4909. That's 780-4909. And feel free to visit our website, bluntyouthradio.org, to listen to free streaming of our past shows and this one, which will be uploaded at least a day or two after our show finishes.
Thank you. Amy Bradstreet also tweeted a pretty interesting question here. She asked, is there an opportunity for students to form their own students' rights groups that serve as student advocates within schools?
And I think our schools do have civil rights teams, don't they?
Yeah, they do. But as we were discussing...
I started a civil rights team at South Portland, and I think what we're supposed to deal mostly with is, you know, if students or teachers are making derogatory comments or doing things that are infringing on kind of the civil rights, which is mostly based on the sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, gender identity, kind of when hateful things are happening, that's what civil rights teams are supposed to respond
to. But age is not one of those things.
I don't think age is one of those things. It should be. I was bringing this up when we were at the civil rights training. I'm like, why is this man being so ageist right now? We're at a civil rights training. Ben, we also, most schools have student councils, which supposedly, you know, are the voice of the students. They say, you know, when the
principals try to ban grinding at dances. They say, well, students don't want you to ban grinding. Maybe we can work together to make it a happier environment without banning things.
At least my experience, I served on the student executive board, not the student executive board, the student council at my school, and I was not impressed by the fact that we spent every single meeting discussing fundraising and nothing more.
What to do for prom, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think in the civil rights groups and the student council, there might be some really good ideas. Like, Gabby was obviously at a meeting and said something about ageism, but it seems like it's really hard for them to take action because, like you were saying earlier, they don't have a vote.
Right.
And student representatives don't have a vote either in the education council, the school board. So what are perhaps we should be represented more, or we should be represented more equally, I should say.
You know what I think it is the time that you would have to make a comment or present your case would be during a meeting when they have public comment on stuff mm-hmm. that's not on the agenda. So I guess if you were really passionate, if the group decided they were really passionate about something, they could go to all of the school board meetings and then stand up during public comment and state their piece. And who knows, you know, if the school board would listen, if it would go anywhere. But that's a good point that we should probably be bringing up to our student councils and our civil rights teams that, you know, we may not have a lot of power, but the little power that we have, we probably should be using more.
Yeah. Christian, what's been your experience with student representation at Casco Bay High School, where you attend?
I'm not really sure. I don't follow those.
Right, that's totally fine.
I know that there's one representative from each school. Is there one male and one female, or just one?
On the school board?
On the school board, the student representative.
It's just two.
Two from the Portland Public Schools.
Yeah, I think. There's one from Casco Bay.
As well?
There's a male, Oliver Nolan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who we got in touch with but was unable to make it for the show tonight. To all you listeners out there, if you want to call in and say something to us in our remaining 5 minutes of our show, our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. Or you can tweet at us at Blunt Youth Radio. I'm here with Gabby Farrell from South Portland High School and a student representative on the school board in that very same town, and Christian Yambe, who attends Casco Bay High School. I'm Leo Hilton.
And I'm Tyler Simpson.
And we both attend Portland High School here in Portland, Maine. And tonight we're discussing failure of school policy. And we've discussed a lot tonight. And I think it all has kind of boiled down to the issue that students themselves aren't represented enough in the whole hierarchy of how policy is created and then deployed at our schools.
Anything you'd like to add? I think it seems like that students aren't represented enough, and that representation that we have is not respected much.
Yeah, that's. Yeah,
I think that might be one of the key issues, is the respect part of it. Is that, you know, they might listen to us, but who's to say that they're listening and considering what we have to say with the same value as everyone else?
And that just reminds me of when I was perusing the policies. I was trying to find one for when students are unhappy with the performance of a teacher. And I know it, you know, sometimes they're like, well, he just gives too much homework, wah, wah, wah. But sometimes it's, you know, like, he's not being respectful to us. He's saying things that are really offensive, or they're not teaching the material in a, you know, correct manner. And that's really, there is no policy on that. I don't know, there's a policy on, you know, correct conduct between students and teachers, and it basically touches on, you know, you can't sexually harass them, and you can't invite them to your house without permission from the principal. Yeah. And that's pretty much all it says about student and teacher contact. And I think that maybe what we're missing is, I've always thought that some teachers do this. They give out a little survey at the end of the year, you know, how could I do this better?
But what about an official, you know? Do you feel safe in this classroom? Do you feel that this teacher is doing everything they can to be the best educator that they can be? And I don't, that's not there. I can't find it. And I mean, do we think that it should be there?
Yeah. Maybe.
Like you said, there are a lot of rules for how, there are some rules for how a teacher can't act toward a student, but there are a lot more rules about how a student can't act towards
exactly.
a teacher.
There's five different policies. Insubordination, you know, unrespectful to teachers.
There's nothing about teachers not being respectful to students.
Yeah.
And there's nothing about the administration not being respectful to students.
And, you know, when you bring that up, you know, you're talking to a group of students, do you feel respected in school? A lot of, they have stories to tell, you know, like things that teachers have said or done that are definitely not appropriate, but, you know, maybe don't fall under sexual harassment. And who do you tell? And I know I've had issues with teachers before, and I've told the administration, and they've said that, you know, they'll have a talk with them, and but you don't really, you don't get a follow-up. And did they really have the talk? You know, what is the talk going to do? Is it just going to make the teacher annoyed and be even more disrespectful?
Suspicious and angry of all the students.
Exactly. And I think that's a definite problem. I think if there's going to be respect one way and it's going to be so heavily guarded and like you have to be so respectful and stand up and pledge allegiance to the United States of America and be, you know, finish all your homework on time. And then, but what if your teachers are yelling at you and like being really rude and mean and there's no place to talk about that.
Right. That's very true. So in the few moments we have remaining, our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. If you have a question or a comment about the failure of educational and school policy, yeah, you can also tweet at us at Blunt Youth Radio if you have a question, and that would be fantastic.
I would have to say the takeaway from all this is even though we're not like fully represented in the school board, we should still continue to speak up on things that that aren't right. 'Cause I know a lot of us just keep it to ourselves. Like me, after this incident, I wasn't really talking about it. I told one of my buddies, and he's like, "That's outrageous. You should tell people about it." And we talked about it for a while.
Is.
I talked to it to some teachers, and they all were on my side. And that's when I went back to the principal and talked to him about it. And that's when he apologized.
Yeah, and on our Twitter, Amy Bradstreet tweeted a link, if you want to check it out, to the adult privilege checklist. So that's on our Twitter at Blunt Youth Radio. If you want to check that out. We only have a minute left, so I'd like to thank our guests, Gabby Farrell and Christian Yambe. Thank you for coming on, and thank you for your fantastic pieces.
Thanks for having us.
Yep.
Next up is Jazz. I'm Leo Hilton.
And I'm Tyler Simpson.
And you've been listening to Blunt Youth Radio's show on the failure of school policy.
Have a good night.
Yeah, and we'll see you next week at 7:30.